Historian Paula Becker first encountered the Northwest author Betty McDonald when Becker was in grade school in Texas. She picked up at some point that McDonald had lived in Washington State, and that stuck with her because she remembered seeing Washington State stickers on the apples in her lunches. Becker's introduction to the author was the same as most people's, through her series of children's books, Mrs. Pigglewiggle.
So the idea of the Mrs. Pigglewiggle books is that there is this wise, kind of kind woman who is a widow, and she lives in this big old house, which actually is upside down. So the chandeliers, you can sort of toast marshmallows on because they come out of the floor. She finds smoothing techniques to kind of get rid of bad childhood behavior. For example, a little girl who never wants to take a bath and her mother is just despairing. Mrs. Pigglewiggle says, well, here's what you do. Just don't make her bathe. Let her get dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. And then one night when she's sleeping, once she has a fine crop of soil on her, some topsoil, you go in at night and you sprinkle radish seeds on her. And then when they sprout, she will definitely want to take a bath, and that is how it plays out.
So how did you come to learn that there was more to Betty McDonald than just the Pigglewiggle books?
Well, so the first thing I did when I moved to Seattle, I mean, literally, absolutely, almost the very first thing was go and get my Seattle Public Library card, and started going at that time to the Northeast branch, and I made friends with the children's librarian there because I had kids, and one day I said to her, you know, Gail, this Betty McDonald, she wrote Mrs. Pigglewiggle. Is she still alive? I had no idea. This was in the early 90s. And she said, oh, I don't think so. But, you know, of course, you've read her other books. And I said, no, she has other books. I was so excited. I figured other Mrs. Pigglewiggle books. And she said, oh, no, no. She wrote The Egg and I. Don't you know that book? And I thought, geez, that sounds kind of familiar, The Egg and I, but I hadn't read it. And so immediately she said, the librarian said, well, you can't live in the state and have not read The Egg and I.
And how would you describe the feel of a memoir like The Egg and I?
So The Egg and I, which was not marketed as a memoir at the time, is about Betty's experiences in the late 1920s when she married an insurance salesman who immediately decided that they should go and raise chickens and eggs on the Olympic Peninsula.
So you recognize that she had a real flair for writing, and writing in a very particular kind of voice. What did you connect with besides appreciating her sentences?
Well, you know, what really, really hit me with Betty McDonald was her sense of place. And Betty's second book that I read for adults was The Plague and I, which is about how she survived tuberculosis. And I was really interested in that, first of all, because she talks a lot about Seattle. And as I was learning my way around, I was reading Betty's books about Seattle. And I felt like I had a second set of eyes, like I was learning, you know, these things both in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and I was also learning them in the 90s. And it was very magical for me. So I realized that I could go to Seattle city directories, and I could go through and I could look up Betty's family name, the Bards, her maiden name, and I could see where they had lived. And then I realized that I could see where other people who she mentions in the story had lived. And so I went on this kind of treasure hunt of figuring out all of these houses. And I realized quite soon that the house that she had lived in during the Great Depression was just a couple of blocks from the house that my husband and I were renting in Ravenna at the time. And I was just like, whoa, Betty was my neighbor. And so I took to kind of hanging out in front of that house as often as I could. I kind of stalked the house.
Some professional loitering.
Mm-hmm. This became sad in subsequent years because the house was not maintained over the long term and eventually became a squat house. And so I had to kind of watch that decline over the course of 7 or 8 years.
And you paid it a visit right before it was demolished.
I did. I saw the sign go up that said that it was going to be demolished, and I was like, no. And I thought it would be valuable to save some actual physical artifacts from that house. And so I contacted the developer, and, you know, he said, okay, you're not going to like what's in there. You know, he wanted to first send me in with a police officer because he said it's in such bad shape. But the morning that they were getting ready to demolish it, he contacted me and said, if you can come right now, you can go through the house before we knock it down. So I started thinking to myself, I've got to do this fast, you know, and I was trying to experience it because it was valuable to me, hugely valuable and emotional. But I also was, I knew I couldn't be in there forever. I went to the back window and I saw the backhoe, the guy in the backhoe, he was knocking down the shed. And he had said to me, you know, when you're done, I'll knock down the house. Be sure you let me know when you leave. And so I walked through these rooms thinking, okay, this was Betty's mother, Sydney's room. And that means that this was where, when Betty found out she had tuberculosis, but she hadn't yet gone to the sanitarium, she was put to bed in her mother's bed. And then all the family came up and they were smoking cigarettes here. And then the nurse from the tuberculosis hospital showed up and was horrified that everybody was smoking. So I had like all of these Betty stories rolling through my head as I was making my way through and undoing with my screwdriver doorknobs and trying to get, you know, windows down. And I had as much as I could carry. And finally, at the very end, I went downstairs and I found the brick fireplace, which she's described so much how the family would gather around it. They had no money, but they could listen to the dance marathons on the radio. They would listen to football games, make a pot of chili that everybody who showed up would eat. And I just stood there looking at this fireplace that had been like the hearth to this family that I cared so much about. And I thought, I am the last person who's ever going to walk through this house. And it just was, I think, the most remarkable experience I ever expect to have as a historian. It was so personal.
So what did you begin to learn about her life based on those memoirs and a couple of others that she would write later, all within a really short period of time, actually? What did you learn about the kind of life she lived?
Well, I mean, you learn from reading the books themselves. And so what I learned is that while at the end of The Egg and I, Betty says that she and her husband are moving to a more modern chicken ranch with electricity and running water, and she's so relieved. In fact, in her real life, she actually left the marriage, which was abusive, and moved back to Seattle and then spent all of the 1930s and the first couple of years of the 1940s trying to earn a living for herself, her daughters, Anne and Joan, her younger siblings, and her mother. In her books, she describes this in ways that are poignant, but also humorous. And the way that someone could not let what fate had brought them kind of pull them under, I found very, very interesting.
Yeah. So what were some of the areas where her private writings and her published writings diverged?
Well, certainly anything to do with her first husband, because they divorced and they had a very fraught kind of post-marriage life where he was, you know, put into jail for not paying child support, and it went on and on and on and on.
Yeah, so that relationship obviously came out very different in The Egg and I, which is really pretty funny, kind of whimsical, touching book.
Yes.
And what was it like for you? How did it change your relationship with her to learn all of this detail and particularly all of the hardships she endured?
I was very moved at the thought of how hard she worked and what a momentous task she accomplished as a young unmarried mother during the 1930s in particular. You know, how hard she worked, and yet she kept a sense of humor, and even including the bout with tuberculosis. I mean, gosh.
Yeah, say more about that. I mean, like, if you look at it, I mean, tuberculosis, divorce, domestic violence, yeah. Poverty, I mean, all these very, very difficult setbacks that could easily have turned into a pretty mopey book.
Yeah.
But she managed to write in such a kind of jaunty, upbeat way. How do you think that she pulled that off?
Well, the bards have this saying, don't be a saddo. Don't be a saddo. You know, if you're feeling bummed or down, you know, go take a walk or bake a pie or, you know, tell your kids a story. Do something. Don't mope. And so she had that as a really kind of basic underpinning.
Paula Becker is a staff historian at HistoryLink, and she's the author of Looking for Betty McDonald, The Egg, The Plague, Mrs. Pigglewiggle, and I. Thank you so much, Paula.
Oh, thank you for having me.